What's up, everybody? I'm your host, Chandler Tate, and with me today, I just have Matt Byrne from last week.
Hello.
Austin and Tate couldn't join us because they were busy in their lives today, so we'll be missing them for episode 2, but hopefully they'll be back for episode 3. Or maybe we'll have some new faces in. But how are you doing today, Matt?
I'm doing pretty good.
That's good. So, have you been doing anything in the gaming world this week?
I think this week's been really slow, you know, a lot of World of Warcraft, yeah, playing those battlegrounds, trying to get my PvP gear, a lot of grind in World of Warcraft,
yeah.
So it tends to take a lot of time to, you know, get to where you want to be going. Mm-hmm. A lot of League of Legends, looking at Dishonored, maybe picking that up. I tend to be someone who doesn't really, I don't like to buy into the hype of games a lot,
yeah.
Because it's left me with, high expectations, but then the quality of the game doesn't meet up to what I was really looking for it.
Yeah.
And I can understand people, like, they come into it, like, they didn't really expect, for example, when people were, you know, everyone was hyped up for Skyrim, you know?
Yeah.
People didn't really know what Skyrim was going to be, really.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know what the depth of it, because they didn't give, like, this, when you showed the demos, they didn't show you, like, the full game, you know? They left you kind of like, what, is there going to be more and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And then people were, like, lining up and they realized, wow, there's a lot more to this game than what they really advertised.
Yeah,
you know, I feel in an essence like the underselling of it really like made it something unique.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't overhype what it was going to be.
Yeah,
they didn't say, oh, you're gonna be this guy. There's gonna be a huge world to explore, tons of quests.
Yeah, go at it. Massive. Like the game is so like for instance the unlimited side quest system that they had, like,
oh,
that's just crazy. Like I've been playing the game. I have like 50 hours of game time in it now, and I have barely even scratched the main story because I'm more of like a completionist. So like when I play RPGs or MMOs and stuff, I like to knock out as all of the quests or as many as I can. And since Skyrim has so many side quests, I'm so busy doing those that it's kind of hard to get back on the main storyline. But that's kind of what, like, I kind of have like a goal to do maybe over the next month or something to maybe try and finish out the main storyline since I've completed so many side quests. It's kind of gotten to the stage where I'm essentially bored. And, I can't only get back on track on that, but then you have the new Hearthfire DLC now that has, where you can, like, create your own estate and have, like, your own, workers and stuff like that, and guards and everything. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, speaking of Dishonored, that release this past week, we have, with a Metacritic score of 88 out of 100, released on PC, PS3, 360, and, excuse me, PlayStation Lifestyle said, in a year in an industry stricken with a plague known as Sekiltis, Dishonored is the perfect cure and should etch its name into every Game of the Year discussion with a sharply tipped assassin's blade.
Yeah. I mean, I've discussed this before. I always seem to question the objectiveness of out of 100 scores that some of these reviewers seem to give.
Yeah.
Because I've seen videos. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Twitch.tv, where you can watch people stream games. That's a lot of where I get a lot of my information on games and stuff, and where I actually see, I feel that really, like, when a new game really releases,
yeah,
when you go, like, watch someone actually streaming play that game in real time, you know, and they're going through the game, there's no cuts, you know, you can look on YouTube, but a lot of time people cut out stuff, you know,
yeah,
unless you're looking at a Let's Play, and they won't even play more than, like, 20 minutes or something. thank you. But it seems like I've seen a lot of video on Dishonored, and it seemed very, very interesting. There's a story behind it. It drives you. I think a lot of games, especially for Skyrim, they pitch this whole, oh, we got a lot of side quests. And I mean, that's good, but it allows for you kind of lose sight of where you're actually going.
Yeah.
Is like a side effect of that kind of, we have so much side quests, but the story's not that interesting.
Yeah.
You know? I think with Dishonored, they go for the side quests, but they try to make it open-ended. Like, here's the mission, you know, and here's a side mission, okay? The side mission basically states, you can go, this person wants you to do this, but you want to do this. Like, you want to assassinate this one guy, but this other guy's offering you this easier way to do it if you give him a favor, for example. That's in the beginning part of the game, so no spoilers. But it seems it's trying to be more open-ended. It doesn't, in locking you down with a story that you have to kind of follow, it in essence is trying to make it so, okay, you have to be in the story. Well, we're not going to just give you one way to do the story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's going to be multiple open windows, multiple ways to assassinate. It's Assassin's Creed, how I really thought Assassin's Creed should feel.
Yeah.
I always felt like Assassin's Creed, especially in the first one, it kind of felt a little like there was a monotony to it. You know, there was a routine you followed. I can't remember exactly, but you'd go through these like these quests and stuff.
Yeah, like the biggest point about, I think, in this first Assassin's Creed game, had like, you go around, it had this little story that you followed, but they didn't really kind of emphasize on it. What you did is you went around like the different cities around the Crusader states. And I think it went into a bit into the Egyptian Empire with like Saladin and the Egyptian troops. But you always had like a guy to assassinate, like one main guy to assassinate in every city. But then you had like the same little, there was three quests that you had to do. It was the same three quests in every single city. It was like eavesdrop on this guy's, and I haven't played in forever, but it was just the same three quests over and over and over again, which still a lot of people didn't like. But then they really polished that up with the second, third, fourth game.
I mean, I think what Dishonored does a lot is they're giving you, they're like, okay, you have to assassinate this guy, okay? Mm-hmm. And it frames it very well. You have a main objective, okay, that's something you have to do, which I feel like is kind of coming out of this whole, like, you know, you let the players craft their own experience, but the problem is you're going to have, eventually, it's going to be like, it's going to get to the point where Skyrim was a good stepping stone, okay?
Yeah.
But the problem is you're going to have a game that's, like, trying to be more than Skyrim, you know? You need a part where there's just so much to do, okay? It just overwhelms the player. They don't know what they're supposed to be doing, okay? Mm-hmm. There's no sense of, like, flow, really. You're just kind of, like, bouncing around, just doing random stuff, and there's no reason to do it. Like, my main complaint, which I agree, Skyrim is a very well-designed game. Well, I think the main complaint is, like, there was a lot of side quests to do, but the point of the game was very muddled. Yeah. There wasn't a whole overarching, okay, so you're doing these side quests and you're getting this good gear to do this, you know? They try to give you this choice, like, oh, you'd go with the Rebels or you go with the Empire. But in the end, like, you just felt like that just wasn't important enough. Like, you were becoming the Dragonborn, you know?
Yeah.
You felt you were destined for more,
yeah,
but, like, you weren't really being, like, it wasn't really setting you up for this,
mm-hmm,
you know? And so that's kind of what I feel. And then, like, for Dishonored, it just feels like the game looks more game. I can't say for feeling because I haven't really played it before. What I've seen, and what I haven't really read about, but what I've seen in people's playing it, it's very organic in how you choose to play the game.
Yeah.
There isn't just, like, one strategy to doing it. There's multiple strategies. You can play the whole game without killing anybody.
Yeah.
You can play the game killing everybody. You can play the game, you know, silently assassinating everybody. So they're not trying to lock you into one style of play.
Have you heard of Hitman Absolution?
Oh, yeah.
That kind of reminds me of the whole concept of that game where there's, like, hundreds of different ways that you can, in each mission where you can assassinate the guy they're trying to kill, which is pretty cool. Like, you could poison his drink, you could flat out shoot him, you could make it look like an accident if he walks down, like, an alleyway, kind of like have something fall on his head or something, you know? Like, there's so many different ways you can kill him. It's like, it's not like a pre-scripted event that happens or something they force you into. It's like you get to choose what you do and how you do it and when you do it.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
I feel like that's really the main direction it seems to be for mission-based games, you know?
Yeah.
I think even if Call of Duty even wanted to, you know, so like to switch it up, I think they keep the whole first-person shooter aspect of it. But, like, okay, you have to get to this building and, you know, there's a terrorist, you know, squads over here and over here. Okay, you can try to, you know, you can try to break through the front lines. You can sneak around and ambush them.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's what they did with basically Call of Duty. I believe it was 4, but it was Modern Warfare 1.
Yeah.
What they did, what I thought was very ingenious, was they had the mix of pace. They had you hit a really fast pace, kind of high octane, kind of with the American soldiers, and when you turn to the British SAS, very slow, you know, very stealthy.
Yeah.
I think that was very good. But it still felt that they locked you on a certain path.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just basically, it was go to point A, kill these guys, go to point B, follow this guy because he's not running as fast as you, which doesn't make any sense. Like, you're in a war zone and yet you can run apparently twice as fast as anyone in the war zone.
Yeah.
So it seems like you're the fastest man alive or something. I'm not really sure. That seems just to be bad design. But I think that's for mission-based games. Especially objective-based games, you know, I think that's basically, and that could even be used, like I mentioned before, with Skyrim, like an overarching kind of, for sandbox games, an overarching kind of story of what drives you. Like, because in the end, you know, you have, especially for World of Warcraft, which I seem to be relating back to a lot, but when you get the gear, there's a reason why you're getting the gear. You're not just getting the gear to get the gear. Like, you're not gonna find yourself like sitting there with the, you know, best gear in the game and be like, wow, I have no idea what to do. I mean, you challenge yourself. You find a guild, you know, you go on the best raid, you know, you do the hardest dungeon, you find rated battleground teams, you find arena teams, like, you use it. Like, you can't, yeah. It gives you options, you know, like, once you get to that point. Like, it doesn't say, okay, well, just, you're done.
Yeah. You know? It's like, yeah. I lost my train of thought there, I forget what I was going to say, but, yeah. Is there, anything else you've been, playing this week?
No, I mean, there's not really that much. I mean, other than, I think we discussed this in the last podcast, NBA 2K 13, I believe, came out. I didn't play it, but other than that, really coming out in Dishonored, it's been a very, I would say, slow release schedule for very, like, popular games. I'm sure there have been maybe some indie releases, but I haven't really heard of any. Other than Dishonored, it seems like Dishonored picked a pretty good time to release, really, because,
yeah.
You know, it seems like a lot of gamers were really craving another, like, very well-done game.
Yeah.
And it seems like none of the companies really releasing it. I mean, with the new Call of Duty, I believe, coming out next November, which looks interesting in how it's doing, like, in its kind of futuristic kind of aspect.
Yeah, and I like the, my favorite part about it is the revamped loadout system for multiplayer. It's like, you get a... It's no longer, like in the past Call of Duty games, they gated you to where you had like perk 1, perk 2, perk 3,
yeah.
And you could pick one in each category, but like it was specific, there's perks specific to each category, and then you could pick a gun, and then maybe an attachment if you wanted to, like, et cetera, et cetera. But now, in Black Ops 2, you have 10 points, and you can spend it on like each gun, or each perk, or each attachment, something like they're all worth 1 point, and you can customize your loadout up to 10 points, so you can carry like... If you don't want a sidearm, for example, you can carry, like, three primary weapons if you wanted to. Or you can carry one weapon and deck it out with a bunch of perks if that's, like, your game, you know. Which is cool. Breathe some new life into the multiplayer aspect of that game. But that's what I'm most looking forward to in that game.
Yeah, I think with that, you had the issue with the past Call of Duty games, especially with the perks. You always had that category where it seemed like that category of perks really just wasn't as useful as others. I mean, especially... I can remember for the last Call of Duty game, they had, I can't remember which one I was thinking of, but they had the one where you could see the enemy explosives. It was the green category. It escapes my mind of what it was called.
I can't recall it either.
But it seemed like in that category, it wasn't as useful offensively. It was more like a kind of protective kind of, and that in essence, Call of Duty isn't a very kind of protective kind of game. You go in... And you point your gun at the enemy, and you kill them. It's not a lot about, you know, there isn't a lot of strategy involved, but there's a lot of reflexes involved.
Yeah.
It's a very reflexive game. I mean, I think what Halo did to kind of, like not go with the kind of reflexive, like, trigger, like, I'm going to see you, and I'm going to kill you, you know? I think that with this shield, I mean, it takes a little while to kill someone, but that's the point of it, you know?
Yeah.
You don't just insta-kill someone just because you snuck up behind them, you know? They shoot you. You have that 5-second chance, you know, to get away, throw a grenade, you know. Especially with the new perks they added to the newest Call of Duty, Halo Reach. Oh, not the newest Call of Duty. I'm sorry, the newest Halo. They added a bunch of. They added the one thing where you could smash your fist into the ground and like you had this little like shield around you. I think they did that very well. They made it so that it's not. It's very much more skill based. So it's not. You have these escapes. You know, they added jetpacks now. They added a lot more stuff to just make it so it's a lot more skill oriented.
Yeah.
And I think what Call of Duty like does to balance it is you have like perks that just aren't really like you have perks for escape kind of tactics and stuff, especially for like I don't know, to protect you against like people who just sneak up behind you and like knife you. You had Martyrdom, which was very I think it was in Modern Warfare 2 it was introduced. That was considered to be one of the, you know, kind of cheesy kind of abilities to use. Like, oh, Martyrdom! It wasn't exactly a highly favored. And then it was in the first one, I believe, there was the red ability that gave you more health.
And I think it was called Juggernaut or something.
Oh, yeah, Juggernaut. Yeah. Everyone hated Juggernaut. Juggernaut basically became the one ability that is just like, oh, man, that dude has Juggernaut.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that ties in with... problem is, like, when you have games like that that kind of have balance issues, and you don't really see that kind of, like, being balanced.
Yeah.
Like, especially with Xbox, you don't know if, like, like they're like update's been, you know, update installed. You don't know what they're doing with that update, so you don't really know. So I think with when you're having these consoles evolve, I think you're going to see a lot more involvement from the developers in updating their game. I think you're going to see free DLC become more prevalent, especially when you're going to see like maybe like when COD introduced their new like COD membership pack and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like Call of Duty, I think it's like Pro or Plus or something. It's
Elite.
Yeah. Yes. Like that new kind of membership kind of deal. Yeah. You're going to see that. And I think you're going to see a lot more DLC being either you're going to see DLC being a lot more intricate but better priced, or you're going to see like new maps basically just being, you know, there just to for free, and then you're going to have like other things to replace it, you know. I think new, I wouldn't say new guns, but, you know, new outfits and stuff may come along. Like, when people start, like, realizing the technology catches up, you mm-hmm. know, they don't have to offer the maps, you know. Like, I mean, you have to understand, like, the cost that goes into the maps has to be, you know, has to be made back.
Yeah.
But I think when you're going to see more money-making opportunities with the newer technology that arrives, I think you're going to see a lot more innovative strategies, especially with the new Assassin's Creed, how they're doing the evil George Washington DLC that looks very intricate, and I think you mentioned in the last podcast was being released over a course of a few weeks.
I think it's a few months.
Oh, okay.
And it's like you can buy the season pass for like $30 or something like that, but yeah. And a lot of games are doing that now, actually. Like, yeah, LA, I think LA Noir had the season pass where they had a bunch of different DLC contacts come out. I can't really recall them off the top of my head, but pretty much every big, I'd say like AAA game is using a season pass kind of DLC format now.
Yeah, I think that's just the stepping stone. Like, when you find ways of like making money, I think the old strategy was like you had DLC, but you made DLC basically to make the money, because the problem is once people buy the game, you know. They buy the game, and that money is there. But, like, if you want to introduce new maps and stuff to keep people playing the game, the maps themselves, they cost money to, you know, make.
Yeah.
And, like, the servers that Call of Duty runs on, you know, they have to pay for the servers. So they have to, you know, provide revenue. I think people don't realize that even after Call of Duty makes the games, you know, they're not making the map packs just because they're greedy. They're making it because they need additional revenue, because they still need to cover the server costs.
Yeah.
That they're running, because it's not Xbox Live that's covering the servers. Xbox Live isn't saying, oh, yeah, we'll pay for your servers. Don't worry, Call of Duty.
Yeah, and, like, if you say, like, oh, well, they made $1 billion in, like, 7 days in the game, but then that means they have millions and millions of players trying to all tap into their online servers at the same time, which also costs a lot. So they got to pay money to expand and stabilize their servers so it can support the massive load of people playing it. So
yeah, especially that, like, what you see with, like, the problem is, like, when you had, like, for example, with Counter-Strike, you didn't have that issue. Because you had people on PCs running servers, like, they said, okay, here's a game, it's really fun, you know, you really want to play it. We're going to give you technology to run your own server, so we don't have to pay for the servers.
Yeah.
And thus, we don't have to continually pump money into it. And that's why I think Counter-Strike was very successful, because they didn't have to keep pumping money into keeping these servers operated.
Yeah.
It was on the expense of the players to do it. And the players wanted to do it because the game was fun enough, they really wanted to play it.
That's like Battlefield 3, DICE barely has any of their own servers. They give it to the players, and then the players, like there's dedicated servers on PS3, Xbox 360, and the computer. So, like, they all have that incentive.
Oh yeah, and but I think that's definitely a big I wouldn't say issue, but a big roadblock in when you're gonna see the evolution of these shooters. You know, when more people are playing them, you know, more people want to play online. So you have the issue of servers, and I think people really need to consider that. It's not just the greed, you know, they're not just putting out the money, like, they're not just being like, oh, these map packs are just for the money. Like, they're are for money, but they're for money that they need to use to pay for the server hosting, to pay for the salaries of their staff, you know? So I think that's definitely a big, important issue to consider.
Yeah.
With the new Call of Duty and stuff. And it's going to be interesting to see how future game developers develop new strategies to combat that. Because obviously people really... I mean, map packs are interesting. But the money that's being charged for the map packs is... You know, it's a pretty good deal of money. It's like $15, I think. for a few maps, and people are just like, well, I mean, the maps are interesting, but to them it may not be worth the money.
Yeah.
So I think game developers definitely need to innovate new strategies in which they can create this revenue, mm-hmm. or maybe even in future consoles, creating some sort of server. Like, I think that's what the PC has an advantage over with the server capabilities, like hosting your own server, so it cuts the cost of developers. I think developers kind of forget how much money they really can make without having to pump out these map packs. And stuff.
Yeah. Which kind of makes me wonder how Guild Wars 2, like, it's such a successful MMO, but one of the gimmicks of why it's so successful is because it's free to play. Like, you pay for the game, and you're done. Like, you never have to pay anything. But they have also come out and said that they're going to be releasing new and more content, like, on a frequent basis for free for the players. But I don't really see how they're going to be making... Sure, they made a bunch of money off of the initial launch of the game, but how are they going to pay money to develop the new content, to pay their employees and stuff like that? I don't really see how they're getting that money.
Yeah, I think that comes down to a balance issue. Like with Guild Wars, it's definitely a game in which offering some content for like a price can result in certain, especially with the PvP being one of the biggest things in Guild Wars right now with World v. World.
Yeah.
I think you see, like, with, they might have issues where you can't just sell weapons and stuff because it comes down to, like, oh, you know, buy the best weapons, it's a pay-to-win kind of game.
Yeah.
And I think, and you have, so I don't really know what they're doing to create revenue, but I imagine what they probably have to do to avoid, you know, these balance issues is basically, you know, sell cosmetic changes or XP boosts, things that don't really make the game less fun, but make it like a, maybe have you put you at an advantage, but an advantage that doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter if you level faster or you have a better pet. Like, yeah. Those things don't really 100% matter, but they're cooler. They're cosmetic changes that people really, like, are interested in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, with, like, World of Warcraft, they do that. They sell you, I mean, they sell the hoodies and stuff, but they sell you mounts. They sell you pets.
Yeah.
And, like, those things don't really 100% break the game. And I think that's what Guild Wars is probably going to use in their strategies for marketing.
Yeah. I guess I'll just jump right into what I've been playing. In a nutshell, I've been playing... This past week I reviewed Batman Arkham City, which we were talking about earlier. I gave it, it's the first game I've ever reviewed and gave a 10 out of 10 to. I love pretty much every part of the game. Like, it's just the classic Batman that had all the classic voice actors, and it's like the voice acting was phenomenal. The soundtrack was amazing. It really reminded me of the music score for the Nolan Batman movies. Like, it's virtually the same music, and the theme of the game is, the theme song for the game is, really reminds me a lot of the theme song that they used in Dark Knight Rises, which that's a lot of similar. And then the story is very well written, but unfortunately, I love the story so much, I was hoping that they would get the same writer, Paul Dini, I think his name is, wrote the games for Arkham Asylum and Arkham City. He won't be returning for the third game, and neither is the Mark Hamill, I believe his name is, for who plays. He's been playing the Joker in like all the video games, all the cartoons for like the past 20 years or so. He's not going to be returning either, so kind of makes me wonder about how well that game will do, because Arkham City was so good, and obviously, people are going to expect the next game to be just as well, but they're going to have, like, a whole new guy writing the game, and then they're going to have... And the game is supposed to be a prequel to the previous two games about Batman's first encounter with the Joker, and now they're not going to have the original voice actor in there, which is going to be kind of weird as well, hearing a new guy and taking the helm of that. But then I was also... I played some... About halfway through... Have you ever played Red Dead Redemption?
Yeah.
Yeah, I just started playing that for the first time, and I got about halfway through the game this week. But my goal for this weekend is to actually finish the game, because on Monday, the Lord of the Rings Online Riders of Rohan expansion comes out, so I want to jump into that. But I'm the kind of guy that likes to finish a game before he jumps into another game. I can play multiple games at once, but I like to kind of finish and move on so I don't have to worry about playing the other game again. But, yeah, but so I plan on finishing up Red Dead Redemption this weekend and jumping into seeing what the whole Mounted Combat kind of gimmick is like in the Riders of Rohan expansion. But, yeah, that's pretty much what I've been playing.
Yeah. So, one of the talking points is Ouya?
Ouya.
Ouya.
Have you ever heard of this?
I think, is it the, I've heard, I believe it's the console that they were talking about being released that's, like, very, user-friendly and, like, it's open to modding and stuff?
Yeah, what Ouya is, I forget, I cannot recall off the top of my head who is making the console, but it's a console running on, Android, so it has all the Android games. It's from the Google Play Store, and it's basically like you were saying, you can it allows people openly to hack into it. Like, it's not illegal to hack into it or against any kind of like copyrighted material or anything.
Yeah.
It's like you can hack into it, kind of fool around with whatever you want. But it's pretty much it's going to be $100 when it comes out in March, I believe. So pretty much it's going to be like a console for your games that you can play, like, on your Android phone or anything. So, it's kind of, like, moving. So, like, I don't know, for example, I know, have you ever heard of Nova 3?
Mm.
Oh, that's, like, the big shooter on the, the iOS and Android, and they're touting that you can play that now with a dual joystick controller and everything, instead of playing it on your touchscreen phone, which a lot of people complained about, because the controls are all kind of, like, the controls aren't very streamlined at all for touchscreen games.
Yeah. I mean, I feel with Ouya, I feel like a lot of the hype has been kind of misdirected. I think they kind of misadvertised. I think they really didn't touch on the fact that with the Android technology they're using, the capabilities of it for running higher end games may be limited.
Yeah.
And with you may not see as many like big third party. I think more what it's going to be is a more indie kind of console.
Yeah, because
it's what I see with the direction of that console is going to be open to, like, okay, here's where the indie developers go to. Mm-hmm. It's easy to use. It comes with your own development kit, so you can easily integrate your games with it, which is good. But when you want I don't think it's going to be like this huge kind of mega console. I definitely don't see it really competing directly with any of Microsoft's or Sony's or even Nintendo's consoles, because I feel like when you don't have that third-party support, which Nintendo doesn't have, but Nintendo still has, a development team, and it still has decent, power in its, decent processing power in the Wii, like enough so to run decent games. I think the problem is when you have that Android technology, you limit yourself to a selective kind of indie kind of crowd. I think that's definitely profitable. You've seen indie games, especially Minecraft, very profitable games.
Mm-hmm.
But I think basing your whole consumer base on the indie crowd may or may not be a smart choice. I'm not sure. I don't want to speculate before the system even comes out.
Well, I mean, like, if you look at Minecraft, for example, Minecraft was an indie game that was huge. It sold well over 10 million copies. So they made tons of money from that. I mean, you've had other games like Angry Birds made billions. I think it made over $1 billion now or something like that.
It could well have been.
I mean, it's across all platforms. It was an indie game that started on the iPhone and then expanded to everything now.
Oh, yeah.
Which is huge. But, I mean, yeah, you're definitely going to... It's definitely just going to be an indie-only platform, pretty much. You're just going to see a bunch of, like, 99 cent, probably $4.99, $9.99 games. But, yeah. And I think the graphics aren't going to be anything special either. Like, they're not going to be anything on par with the Wii U or the new PlayStation or Xbox or even the current ones. It might be slightly on par with the current consoles we have now. But, I mean, I believe it runs on an NVIDIA Tegra 3 processor. It can output in 1080p, but, I mean, Tegra 3 processors are what's in, like, our phones and tablets right now. I mean, it's not going
to
be anything.
I mean, it's basically what they're trying to... It's basically, it's a console. It's like a tablet. It's like the processing power you would have in your phone.
Yeah.
On a console, probably a little bit better.
Yeah.
Since you can basically, it's a bigger system.
Yeah.
But definitely, I mean, when you have a consumer base, like, you know your consumer base, and especially since I saw this on Kickstarter, and they were definitely funded very well. Like, believe even like the first day or so, they had well over their funding.
Yeah.
I think, you know, when you have that kind of support, you know your crowd. I mean, it's kind of good to know your audience.
Yeah.
I think if they tried, you know, but I think a lot of people had a misconception about it, that they were going to see the new, like, Assassin's Creed being played on the Ouya. I mean, I wouldn't expect it. I mean, if they drastically changed their hardware and, you know, definitely the whole system, I mean, maybe you might see it with mm-hmm. the kind of support it was kind of generating. But I think what you really should expect, I think that's the main issue, is, like, people's expectations. From Ouya, they really should expect, you know, maybe, not I wouldn't say a hardcore, but definitely a dedicated indie console. That's it.
Yeah.
We open our arms, you know, if you're an indie developer and you want to make a game, here's a system for you. It's friendly, and, you know, we're not going to say, hey, you know, you have to abide by these strict rules and regulations and stuff that yeah. have to be in your game.
And, like, the development kit's free, I believe.
Yeah, that's it comes, like... I believe it comes with, I wouldn't say with the system, but I believe you get, like,
Yeah, it does, actually. Comes with a free development kit to everybody who buys the system, so, like, anybody can make a game. That's one of the things they heavily market on is like you can make your own game right from your living room right on the Ouya. So like
yeah.
We're gonna be seeing games from everybody on the platform, which I think is
yeah, really, I think cool. I think that definitely opens up a lot of the you know, the kind of people who feel like, well, I have this really cool idea for a game, you know.
Yeah.
I think definitely we had your own build your own websites online and stuff. I think
yeah.
you're gonna see a lot of straying away from, like, you're going to have, when you have, like, technology kind of advance to the point where you can have these programs that make,
yeah.
you know, programs that make games for you.
Yeah.
You have, like, not the need to know computer programming.
Yeah.
But that's basically for simple games. Like, you're still yeah. going to need to know computer programming if you want to make an intricate kind of game.
That's the kind of thing, like, I think it's very confusing about how they're going about, like one of their biggest marketing cues, like I just said, is that anybody can make a game right from the living room with the Ouya. But I think they haven't said anything about how they would do that. Like,
yeah.
do you have to be smart? Like, my little brother, who's in 8th grade, was talking about this the other day. And he's like, oh, I want to get the Ouya because I can make my own video games. And I'm like, well, you have to be pretty smart with coding and all that to make your own video games. Yeah. But I have no idea. They haven't said anything about how you make your games, what you would do. But
I mean, the thing is, when you have these kind of, like, do-it-your-own kind of, like, programs to make your own games, I've seen them online.
Yeah.
They kind of limit you. Like, here's the kind of things we've included. Like, we've included these little models that you can mm-hmm. use. Okay? We've included these basic, you know, textures you can use.
Yeah.
It really limits you in creativity. And I think... problem is, I think when you have, like, knowing your own coding and stuff, when you develop these games, it'd be a little bit more expressive and a little bit more, like, yeah, expressive of what you really wanted the game to
yeah.
be. When you have these, like, do-it-your-own, I mean, you can get it close to what you saw,
yeah.
like, what you kind of envisioned your game to be, but it's not even going to be, but it may not be close enough. Like, let's say if you try to build Minecraft on these one do-it-your-own things.
It's not going to be anywhere close.
Yeah, it's not going to be anywhere close. I mean... you'd have to have, like, a predetermined area. Like, you wouldn't mm-hmm. have these constantly changing landscapes and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, they're randomly generated.
Which is, like, I think people are going to be disappointed when they see this. Because they're going to be, like, if it's the do-it-yourself kind of thing, they're just explaining, like, they're going to be disappointed because they can't really do anything that they mm-hmm. want to do. But if it's the actual development kit, like a full-on kind of systematic kind of thing, like a full, they're going to be like, what the heck, how do I do this? So I think it's kind of like a lose-lose kind of situation for them. Based on how... excited they've kind of made everybody for the idea.
Yeah.
Well, besides Dishonored, like we were talking about earlier, there's three other, I'd say at least two relatively big game releases. We had the XCOM Enemy Unknown remake of the original XCOM, mm-hmm. which came out for PS3, 360, and PC, and had a Metacritic score of 89 out of 100. Quoting Game Informer, they said, "Don't let the turn-based strategy moniker scare you off. XCOM is a singular achievement that every gamer deserves to experience."
I think that statement, the statement that I don't know, it kind of leaves me a little sour taste in my mouth, because you have this "don't let the turn-based strategy moniker scare you off." Like, it comes out basically out of the gate saying, "Hey, you know, turn-based strategy may not be that good, but, you know, this game's pretty good." Like, it's basically saying, you know, this whole genre is bad, but this game is not that genre. And I think,
yeah.
I said it earlier, I watched, you know, live streams and stuff, and this was one of the games actually being played as well.
Yeah.
And what I saw from this game is a lot of what I've seen in the original XCOM. You know, you had your squad, you know, you had, you basically, you had to, you were dropped in like a landscape. You had to, you know, like walk around, killed the aliens. You know, use tactics. You know, you couldn't just, there wasn't just a button that said, oh, fire and kill all aliens. You know, yeah. You didn't just walk right in. I think a lot of people were concerned with XCOM, like the new one. They were concerned pretty much with it being like a really just like, oh yeah, we're just buying into the FPS hype. That's like pretty much, you know,
taking over the market. That's what they've released. They're releasing two versions. They're XCOM Enemy Unknown is the RTS remake, the strategy remake, which is like what everybody loved with the original title.
Yeah.
But then the reason that a lot of hardcore fans of the original game are turned off and kind of mad is because they're also releasing an FPS title. But that's been delayed and delayed and delayed and pushed back so far. It's supposed to come out quarter one of next year on consoles. I think it's
delayed till never.
It's been pushed back to consoles first quarter of next year, but now they're saying it's going to be a downloadable title instead of a retail title.
Yeah, I mean, I think with a remake, I think it adds the potential to really just kind of, like, you know, redo kind of like what, like, you know, introducing a new technology. I think when you look at the old XCOM, you're like, wow, you know, that game's old. Like, it doesn't, like, a lot of old games, when you look at them, you kind of look at them nostalgically, like, you have to, like, think, like, the mindset you had back then. I mean, a lot of games aren't really impressive now that were impressive back then. Like, you look at them like, wow, you know, this impressed me?
Yeah.
Like, this was considered, like, really good graphics? I mean, that may sound a little condescending, but that's kind of, like, the mindset you kind of look at it at. And when you have these, like, the new technology, I mean, remakes are definitely plausible. But you can't just remake a game and make it exactly the same. You got to innovate, okay? You can't just look at the game and be like, wow, this is just exactly the same one. And I haven't looked at enough of the XCOM, so I wouldn't say, like, oh, man, you know, this game is just, it's just, like, blows the new game, the old game out of the water. But I definitely think, from what I've seen, it does the old game justice in what the, you know, in the mechanics of it.
Yeah.
So I definitely think if you're into the whole turn-based strategy genre, I think this one definitely, you know, fluently like displays how you can accurately make a real-time strategy. Or no, not real-time, but turn-based.
you can't see this, but my dog is currently attacking a pillow right now. We can't see him. We can just hear the damage that's going on across the room. but yeah. Sorry.
I guess we'll be cutting this out of the audio.
I don't know if you can hear that. I don't think it's picking it up.
Actually, with the audio program, there's like an equalizer, and we might be able to cut out the frequency of the dogs. we might have to cut out this part of the audio. But let's move on. Next on the agenda of game releases, we have Pokemon Black and White 2. Unfortunately, Austin's not here. He was very hyped.
I know he got this, too. He said he's been playing this a bunch this week.
He was very hyped for this game, and I was kind of hoping he would, you know, shed some light. As someone who isn't a huge Pokemon fan, I don't really know what I can really bring into a discussion on the quality of the game. But I think, it definitely, if I'm just looking at it as a Pokemon game, it's just probably what I've seen with Nintendo when they do the Pokemon games. They usually have a formula. And I think on here it mentions, you know, despite throwing in some new bells and whistles, Pokemon Black and White 2 doesn't deviate from the established formula. I mean, Quoting from game trailers. I mean, even in the title, Black and White 2, it's a direct sequel. Yeah. So it's basically, you know, Black and White 2 is just Black and White, essentially. I mean, they may throw in new things, but, you know, Nintendo doesn't really like to, you know, gamble with their, you know, their franchises. They like to basically have a formula that's going to be 100% successful, and they know that it's gonna work.
Yeah.
And they kind of feel like deviating from that kind of a formula kind of shows that they don't, well, it doesn't really show anything, it just kind of, they don't feel like that'll be as profitable to them.
But I know Austin said he was playing it, and I was talking to him the other day about it. He said he really likes the game, and he loves the game, actually. But he was talking about his favorite thing about the game is that at the very beginning, instead of kind of like, it pretty much just throws you into the game and kind of lets you do whatever you want instead of making you go through like the same little tutorial every single time. And
you still have to go through the gym leader process?
He said you still have to go through the gym leader process, but But he said it basically just gives you a Pokemon and throws you out into the game world. Like, it doesn't set you through the events that pretty much practically the beginning of every Pokemon game always sets you through, where you start off with, like, your friends, and then you go to the lab or whatever, and you select the Pokemon and everything. Yeah. It's like, he said you basically select the Pokemon from right out the gate.
Yeah.
And then, like, jump into the world.
Then what makes this a sequel? Does it carry off on the story of the last one, or what makes it a real sequel?
It continues, I've barely played the original Black and White. I'm trying to play through it, but I really haven't had the time. But it's a direct carryover. It continues on with the story where the story left off in Black and White 1. So
then, I don't know. I think that brings up kind of you go through the gym leaders.
Yeah.
Correct. But you've already become the champion. I mean,
you're a different character, I believe.
I think
it's the events are set place 2 years after the original game.
Then what happened? I don't know. I don't know. I think with that, like, when you have a direct sequel, I think a lot of people wanted, like, okay, I think a lot of people were hyped because you have a sequel to a Pokemon game. In their eyes, you know, you were getting to play your character. I mean, a lot of people, like I mentioned in the last podcast, you know, a lot of people were like, a lot of people were thinking, you know, wow, you know, I became the champion. What happens next?
Yeah.
Like, does my character just, you know, he quits playing, doing Pokemon, he goes to college, you know, becomes a professor or something. He becomes the next Professor Oak.
Yeah.
Like, what does your champion do?
Like, see, if they would have developed these games on the 3DS, they could have done something where they could have kept your save file on the 3DS itself, and then you could have uploaded it and continue on with the next game. But instead, they released the games for past generation.
Yeah, DS. I think they're trying to keep the DS alive. Like, when you're having, like, do you want to, I don't want to say this in crude terms, but when you're trying to milk a system, like, everyone knows the DS is kind of seeing its last kind of hurrah.
Yeah.
You know, with the Pokemon games, it's basically, you know, the last kind of straw in, like, the bale of hay that is the DS, you know, games. You see what, like, with the new Pokemon games, you know that the DS is going to be, isn't long for this world, and it's probably going to be replaced by the 3DS eventually.
Yeah.
But I think you had this potential to make a new, like, to craft this organic storyline that isn't, you know, Nintendo's like, you know what, we're going to make a sequel to a Pokemon game, but we're not going to do what people expected, you know, we're going to scrap the gym leaders.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. Like, the reason they probably, I don't know if this is the reason, but, like, when you play a DS game, it saves the save file directly to the game card itself.
Yes.
It doesn't save it to the DS, which you could do on the 3DS. Yeah. So, like, they couldn't continue on from your past character because there's no save file there. Like, you'd have to somehow put both game cards in at the same time. But on the 3DS, you wouldn't need both game cards in.
Yeah. But I think definitely, like, even just ignoring that aspect of, like, you know, I think Nintendo has been criticized a lot, especially by me. I think they've been criticized a lot for just not really deviating a lot from what their original ideas and not really innovating too much. And I think this gave them an opportunity, you know, make a sequel, but make a sequel that's different. Don't just make a sequel. You know, I mean, it sounds kind of weird, but, like, you had this chance to prove to, you know, the whole world that you can make a Pokemon game, but not exactly make just a Pokemon game. You can make something different. You could use the name of Pokemon, but you could innovate with story, maybe with new mechanics and battle and stuff. But I think they just really didn't take that opportunity. They were just like, okay, you know, people are scared of change. We're scared of change. Let's just make the same Pokemon game.
Yeah.
And I think even just having the audacity just to, you know, set it in, I guess, it's probably in the same place, I would imagine.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's just basically, it's just basically black and white again.
Yeah.
I think they missed out on a lot of opportunity there, is what I feel. I mean, I mean, if you're into Pokemon, you're probably just going to buy the game because you're just into Pokemon. But for people who aren't into Pokemon, which is a large denomination of people, this was a chance, you know, to reel them in. You know, say, hey, you know, here's Pokemon, but here's what you're paying. You know, you're not just paying for Pokemon, you're paying for a reiteration of Pokemon.
Yeah. Sorry, continue.
I wasn't actually really going to say anything. I was going to...
Okay. In that case, the fourth game that was released in this past week was Just Dance 4. Which, I guess it performed average if you consider, basing off the Medicare score, it's got a 74 out of 100. The Guardian said that as a fitness regime, Just Dance ranks a fair way above the Zumba game, and it offers its own Latin style workout.
Yeah, I think with when you have these kind of dance games with like with Just Dance being one of the forerunners in this kind of genre, you had Dance Dance Revolution was kind of like the game. You know, it, with the technology, like the limited technology they had, you know, with the, they had these dance pads. You know, you had to follow these certain steps. You know, hit up, hit down, hit left and right at the same time.
Yeah,
and I think it kind of created like this kind of skill that you had to get like. You know, you had to be really, really coordinated to play, you know, these Dance Dance Revolution games. I think with Just Dance, you have this audience that just can dance, you know?
Yeah.
They just dance, and they dance to the music, they dance to these moves.
And you don't need, like, the little pad to dance on either.
Yeah, you don't have to be 100% coordinated, and you can learn as you go along, you know? I think that's really good, but I think, you know, you overuse a series. Like, people are like, well, I have Just Dance 1, or I have Just Dance 2, or I have Just Dance 3. Why do I need Just Dance 4? I mean, it seems like when you're having these new games...
It seems like they could just... like, each game is practically the same thing. It's just they have some new dance moves and some new songs.
They're like, here's some new songs, okay? Basically, it's the same concept, just new songs. I think they're just losing out. I mean,
they could have just released that in the DLC pack or something.
Exactly. I think they're losing out on an opportunity. They're like, okay, I mean, people are just going to get tired of, like, we just don't want to buy the same game. And there's not a lot of innovation you can
probably
do.
$40, $50 on the Wii.
Mm-hmm. There's just not a lot of innovation you can really do with those games. Like, you can't, it's such a strict formula that you have to follow. Like, there's nothing more you can add.
Yeah.
There's anything more, and it just wouldn't be, like, it just wouldn't be fun. Like, the fun of it is just how simple it is, okay? You stand, I mean, I guess Just Dance with the Wii isn't really as fun. I think Just Dance, especially with the Kinect, that was a huge selling point of the Kinect. You play Just Dance, it gets your movements, and you dance, you don't use any peripherals, you don't have to wave your Wii remote everywhere, you just dance.
Yeah.
So, I think that's, I don't know, I think the score was based more not on the game itself, but maybe based on the idea of there being another, you know, another game that really isn't needed, you know, another sequel that just, you know, sequelitis. That just isn't. You don't need another sequel for a game that just isn't innovative. What's a sequel?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Lots of cuts. There's gonna be lots of cuts.
Dog's having
your dog hiccuping.
Yeah, my dog's having another moment right now. So, is he wondering what the heck we're laughing about?
Still looking at him like, what are you doing? Why are you laughing at me?
Now she's coming over. I guess we'll jump into the news part of the show.
Yep.
The new MOBA title from WB, Guardians of the Middle Earth, has got a release date on the PS3. So I'm guessing it's coming out on the PS3 before the Xbox 360 because there's no release date for that yet, which is interesting because I guess Sony sees some light in this that they want to. I'm sorry.
I don't really know.
Oh, can we look it up? Yeah.
Yeah.
Why don't you type that in while I read the rest of this?
Okay.
But yeah, it's going to release in the UK digitally on PSN on December 4th, and it'll release on retail on the PSN on December 7th. In the US, both versions will be available on December 4th. The PSN edition is going to be $15. The retail version is going to be $30, but with that $30 that you spend, you'll get the season pass to all DLC.
Okay. So what I'm essentially getting at, it's kind of like a Dota kind of style game.
It's exactly like they're taking it. Well, they're heavily inspired, they said, by League of Legends.
Oh.
And they want to bring it. They want to bring that kind of game to consoles because League of Legends is the PC only title.
I think. Okay. Well, I have a decent knowledge of League of Legends itself. being an avid League of Legends player.
Yeah.
But I think when you have the formula of a Dota kind of game, I mean, I know a little bit of Dota, but Dota having more characteristics, or not, I wouldn't say more characters, but more mechanics in it.
Yeah.
I think if they're heavily inspired from League of Legends, I think it's very good. Because yeah. League of Legends is definitely very, very easy to kind of get into.
Yeah.
Because Dota, you have a jungle that's very, very complex in the routes that you can take. You have, definitely weird kind of. There isn't really a strict kind of categorization of champions.
Yeah.
Items are very weird, and they don't feel very. Like it kind of feels weird to build in Dota.
Yeah.
You have to creep. You have to last hit so you don't push a lane and you don't get ganked because the complex jungle routes. It's very hard. To stay safe in your lane. You have to last hit your own creeps. So you have to kill your own creeps in Dota, which is I wouldn't say it's overly complicated, but it's a complex game. It's not something you just jump into one day and be like, wow man, I'm so good at this game. I'm the best. You know? It's complicated.
Yeah.
But I think especially with it on the console, you get a lot of like what when they did with it with Halo and stuff.
You also get a bigger player base too.
Yeah, but with Halo, when they did their little real time kind of strategy kind of
Halo Wars.
Halo Wars. You had kind of an issue with effectively controlling your units and kind of like you know, you really like the main strategy of Halo Wars was bunch all your units together and send them all together, and you had your tanks mixed in with your infantry, and there was no really like lines, and it kind of mixed up and stuff. And I know
the initial previews for. Guardians of Middle-earth, where everybody likes it, but I haven't physically gotten a chance to play it, to say my own opinion. But.
I think with the game itself, I'm not really sure how well it will control is my main issue. I mean, I definitely think, from what I can see in the screenshots, I definitely think it'll look very, it looks very, artistically, it looks very well done.
Yeah.
Graphics-wise. I think definitely you'll have an issue with skill-wise, like how well does it control?
Yeah.
I think you really have to look at it, I think as a player, you really have to feel for it, you know. I mean, I could say a game doesn't control well, and you could say, well, I like the control scheme in this game.
Yeah.
You know, some people like to play games. I mean, I know people who play World of Warcraft, they only move using their mouse, and they bind all their keys and stuff.
Yeah.
They have the WASD, which is usually used to move in World of Warcraft. They have that bound.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and I think then they only use their mouse to move. It's pretty weird to get into. I wouldn't do it, because that feels weird for me. I might eventually. Because you have to, there's a limited amount of keys you really can press accurately with your left hand without like going like making your arms like twist and turn and stuff.
Yeah.
So I definitely think it's a smart idea, but I think definitely with the standard PS3 controller, which we happen to have right here, you know, you have your left analog stick, your right analog stick. I think effectively with the kind of top down kind of view that they have in this kind of game. It's going to be very hard to very control, maybe control your character. Last hitting, is that a thing? Is this, I don't know enough about the game, really, to actually consider, like, what, I'd probably have to look a lot in the game, especially play it, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's one thing to hear, like, last hitting's easy, you know? Getting gold is easy, and then playing it for yourself, you're like, wow, you know, this is a lot more challenging.
Yeah.
So, that's just my little shtick on it. I mean, I'm not judging the game. I'm just saying the control scheme. There's a reason why MOBAs earlier haven't really been, you know, ported over to consoles, is because without a mouse and a keyboard, controlling your character is very hard, especially with a top-down kind of view. I think with the new MOBA that came out, Smite, actually, which is still, I believe, in closed beta or open beta. And it's only PC exclusive, but what they have this kind of over-the-shoulder kind of camera view, which I feel would be very, very well done with a PS3 controller, because, you know, you move your left analog, you know, you move your character view with the right analog, you have your abilities bound to your X, you know, X square, triangle, circle.
Yeah.
And you don't really have, like, an issue. You're not like, wow, man, I'm just not even controlling very well. But, I mean, I think that's definitely, I think, a more plausible idea. But I'd like to see the execution of this. It sounds like an interesting idea.
Yeah.
I just don't know how well it'll be executed.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're working from a disadvantage. And how they work with that disadvantage, they could totally revolutionize, like, hey, you know, we can make a MOBA for a console.
Yeah.
And it'll control well, you know?
I also like the fact that for the retail version, it's like, you get the season pass for DLC with your copy of the game. Like, instead of going out and buying, going back to Assassin's Creed 3, we have to go out and pay $60 for the game, but then we have to lay down another $30 later if we want the DLC. Instead, they just bundled it all into one price, yeah, and we get everything immediately right out of the gate.
Yeah, and that brings up another question that I have that I don't really want to... I don't really want to get into this too much, because I really don't feel like... I don't really feel like I want to get, like... because I don't know when this is really being... This is being released on December 4th, and we have a few more, you know, shows for this this being, you know, available to the public. So yeah. I think, you know, definitely I want to do some more research on this, because I don't want to report on what I don't really know. Yeah. But I definitely have a question, basically, on just a general kind of question that isn't a pretty rhetorical question, but what will they be doing in terms of shop-wise? Like, for League of Legends... Well, not for Dota, you get all the characters. You know, yeah. You don't have to buy any characters, is what I believe they're doing right now. But for League of Legends, what they're doing is you have to you pay for champions, you pay for skins, you pay for runes, which are basically like little power-ups.
Yeah.
But the runes are paid with in-game currency, and the skins and champions can be paid with in-game currency or real money.
Yeah.
So I don't know what they're doing. I mean, it creates a nice revenue for League of Legends through that kind of like in-game transactions, but I don't know what they're planning to do with this.
Yeah.
I like to research it more. I definitely like this to be a topic, definitely on the next, on a future podcast. So probably make a note on putting that in a future podcast, but definitely want to be more informed, want to, you know, make sure I'm not talking from a position of ignorance, you know, don't want to report on something I don't really know much about. So I definitely want to get more informed for that. And that's just what I feel.
Well, moving on. The Wii U exclusive Rayman Legends has been delayed until Q1 2013. It was originally a launch title for the system, but the development team came out and said that they want to make sure the game lives up to the fans' expectations after the previous Rayman game did so well, critically and sales-wise. They said, "We are happy that fans are excited about the game, and we are taking the time to make sure we deliver a game that lives up to and hopefully exceeds their expectations." They said they'll share more on details soon. But this brings the number of launch games for the Wii U in North America to 23 and 12 in the UK.
I think what this kind of shows, I'm not a huge as someone who played Rayman on the N64, I liked that kind of 3D kind of platforming. Yeah. I understand the idea of like the 2D kind of scrolling by, kind of cartoony kind of style. I understand that. But what saddens me is, with the show of this being successful, in my eyes, it kind of shows the depth of kind of 3D Rayman.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of, they're straying away, you know, they're going for the more, the family-oriented kind of thing. You can play this with anybody. And I think
the game really reminds me of the last Rayman game, really reminded me of Mario. Like, I was like, this is practically Mario on my PS3 now.
Exactly. I think with that, you know, you have, like, these kind of games... It's just like a scrolling kind of family fun, but you can still play it with just your friends.
Yeah.
You can play with anybody. It's like it's not limited to just gamers, you know? Mm-hmm. I think those I understand why those games are popular, but you know, those games, as someone who avidly plays games, you know, those games don't appeal to me, cuz they're not made, this game wasn't made for gamers. It was just made for people who just like to play games.
Yeah.
It like someone who just casually wants to turn on their PS3. Oh, I'll play a little bit of Rayman Legends today, you know?
Yeah.
Just play a little bit, play around. Not anything serious, you know?
Yeah.
So I feel like this game, in essence, is just kind of a fun, kind of, you know, play around kind of game. And I understand why it's fun. You know, I understand why it's critically acclaimed, because it was very well designed.
Mm-hmm.
But for something as well designed, it you can't ignore that it's not made in any aspect to really appeal to a harder core audience.
Yeah.
But... I mean, what do you feel on this?
I'm pretty much in the same boat. Like, it's pretty much just a cat. It's pretty much I have played the previous Rayman game and I thought it was fun, but I personally thought it was a pretty much just a ripoff of the new Super Mario Brothers game that came out for the Wii, but just with its own kind of spin on things and like its own kind of unique ideas, but. I pretty much just—it's definitely not a game for the hardcore crowd at all. It's definitely a family-oriented kind of casual game. Play with a couple friends if you have them over. It's definitely a fun game to play if you have a couple friends over or something. But It's not like a, like you were saying, a hardcore game at all, yeah. But it doesn't have like a story or anything, but yeah.
Okay. So on to the next story. We have Modern Warfare 2 map. 2?
Yeah.
Okay. Removed following controversy. Activision had removed the Favela multiplayer map from Modern Warfare 2 following complaints from Muslim gamers concerning picture frames in the second floor bathroom of one building within Favela. When viewed through a scope weapon, the frames contain a quote from the Prophet Muhammad that translates to "Allah is beautiful and he loves beauty." One of the paintings is located directly above a toilet. So, I mean, it kind of is weird considering Modern Warfare 2 isn't exactly a new game. And I think it also is very weird.
Yeah, I feel, like I understand the whole thing about why they might be mad that this painting would be hanging right above a toilet. Like, I guess maybe you could say, but honestly, I think they're just looking for something to complain about.
I think.
And
yeah,
it's just like, why do you have to, for one thing, the game is 3 years old. Like,
yeah,
it's like, come on, we moved on. It's like, and it's never really
happened. Late reaction.
Yeah, very late to the gun here. But it's just like, why? And I mean, it's even saying it's praising their God. It's not misdemeaning them in any way. I guess yeah. You can say one of them's located directly above the toilet. But my bathroom, I have pictures hanging around all over the place in my bathroom.
Exactly. I mean, I know in my bathroom for sure. I mean, there are quotes, there are little picture frames of, like, footprints on the beach, you know?
Yeah.
And quotes from the Bible, you know? Because my family is very religious, you know? They put that above there. Because, in America, you know, public bathrooms have a bad image. But, like, you know, bathrooms at home kind of have this, you know, they're like a kind of like a sanctuary, you know?
Yeah.
You go there, it's the restroom. I mean, I don't think we should be talking, we should really go into that much about bathrooms on a gaming podcast, but... You know, there's a different image on what bathrooms are over here. We don't really consider, we kind of, you know, with the kind of, like, toilet technology we have, you know, people spend, you know, hundreds of dollars on, like, these, you know, toilets, you know, they, their bathroom's really nice, they're like a palace, you know, and the toilets are their own. But I think, you know, this shows, like, with this and, you know, with, the riots over in Benghazi and all those other Middle Eastern countries, you know, I think this shows a lot of unsettling feelings, you know, when you have these extremists kind of running this, you know, religious organization, and you have these religious zealots, you know, they're basically being, you know, the representatives of these people, and the people just, they're letting them do this, I think they're very afraid to step up and say, that's not us, you know, that's not what we believe, you know, don't listen to these guys, they're out of their mind.
Yeah.
You know, I think the followers of the Islamic faith that aren't these, you know, extremists and these nut jobs that'll raid, you know, these peaceful embassies and kill, you know, a peaceful ambassador who was working on peace missions, you know. I think they really need to step up and say, you know what, this isn't us, you know. Don't ignore these guys. They are not us. You know, this is us. This is what we believe.
Yeah.
I think they're just sitting in the back seat. I think it's kind of like, kind of takes a page out of Nazi Germany, you know. A lot of people there didn't believe in Nazism, but they stood there. They're like, yep. I don't want to get involved, you know. It's mm-hmm. better if I just turn away. You know, if I don't look at it, it's not happening.
Yeah. In a conversation with The Verge, Sony's Sarah Thompson, who's in charge of content acquisition for PlayStation's new mobile initiative, confirmed that trophy support is on the way, along with online leaderboards, which is something that the more hardcore crowd of the PlayStation community was kind of looking for. But there's no release date other than that's coming soon.
I mean, I'm never one who's been a very big advocate for a trophies, achievements. I've always felt that they're very overrated. They're just basically, oh, you just played the game, you know. I think that achievements have usually always been like, especially for Call of Duty, it's like, complete this mission on Veteran, you know. They're not exactly feats of skill. They're more like, they're the, like, complete random things that don't matter, or just complete objectives that you're already completing.
Yeah. I generally like to go after the trophies, but, like, that's not, like, I'm not, like, the kind of guy that goes out and tries to collect every single trophy they could possibly get in the game. But I do believe that, like, they are fun to get and kind of fun, I guess, if you want to kind of show them off and brag to other friends.
Yeah, I think it more of, like, a kind of, like, a bragging tool, like, hey, you get that tough achievement? No, I didn't get it yet. Oh, yeah, well, I did.
Yeah, but it's also another incentive that game developers can use to help increase the replay value of the game. It's like, go back and play, even if it's like a single player mission or a single player game only. It's like you can go back and do all this stuff to the game too. And
yeah, and really just kind of re-experience the game in like a different kind of aspect. And I think that's a strong suit of achievements. But I think, you know, you have this mindset that kind of gets put into the players. Like, I know I've played with friends of mine that literally we went over to play Madden. Madden is considered basically, you know, a very fluid kind of game. And, you know, it's kind of considered like you play like pickup games with your friends, you know, kind of set up like little games. But I think what you see is you kind of see, like, what I see with him is that he was playing just for achievements. He's like, oh, you play the Giants, you play this team, okay, we'll try to get this achievement exactly. And I was just like, I kind of just want to play the game, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and he was like, well, is this not, do you really just want to play the game? I didn't want to, like, offend him, because it was obvious he was very into the achievements.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that kind of shows, like, there's different mindsets that achievements can put into players. And I think that needs to be considered. Like, you can't just make random achievements. I think if achievements are crafted well, you know, especially they're attractive, they're really like, you know, like get like a kill while, you know, being downed or something. I don't know. Something very like, something that's not really common, you know?
Yeah.
Or something that isn't exactly random.
Yeah.
Or something monotonous. Like, oh, get 200 kills within 10 games. And you, like, you know, you have to like play over and over and it gets really boring.
Yeah.
It should be like something that feels kind of like you're being rewarded for playing well.
Yeah.
You know? Like, oh man, like you can actually flaunt your gamer score because it means something.
Yeah.
But let's move on, because I feel like this topic isn't exactly, there's not a lot you can say. I mean, trophies are trophies. I mean, I guess this will probably excite, you know, a lot of hardcore players, I would imagine.
Yeah, hopefully it does. I mean, it sounds cool.
I think it sounds interesting. I mean, they're implementing this for the PS Vita, or what do they mean by mobile?
I believe the PS Vita already has.
Yeah, because I had the PS Vita, and it seemed like they had trophy support already into that, so I was wondering what they really meant by the mobile.
Then, I guess, I'm pretty sure this is just for the whole cell phone crowd.
Oh, yeah.
Because they have, like, the PlayStation phone and
Xperia
Play. Okay. Yeah. Next topic is the game streaming company OnLive that sold its assets back in August. We recently just found out how much they sold for. They were once valued at $1.8 billion, yet they sold out their company for $4.8 million to the new owner, who thinks he can save the company. But that's a big difference. I mean, I don't see how the heck it could have dropped more than $1 billion. I don't even see why they would even sell out for that much money. In the first place, like, they had to have been pretty desperate, I mean.
I think when you have this kind of, I think the main issue with OnLive is that you had to buy its whole peripherals with it, you know? It had a whole streaming console, what I believe. It had an OnLive controller and stuff. Like, what I believe is OnLive wasn't really even compatible with any of the real systems.
You could use an Xbox controller. I'm not quite sure on how you would actually stream console games.
What I believe what they did with OnLive, you had to buy their whole peripheral set. Like, you had to buy the OnLive console. Like, I don't think it worked.
You probably had to buy, like, a little thing, but it just streams the game, so it's nothing that would have had, like, a big price tag. But, yeah, you could use their Xbox controllers if you wanted to. I know if you played on the computer, you could have just streamed the console game to your computer screen and use an Xbox controller.
Yeah, I don't even know if you could use it on the computer. I think you still had to buy, like, a thing with it.
Yeah.
And I think people were just, like, I don't know. I think it comes down to a little bit like poor. Like, when I watched the commercials, I wasn't 100% sure. Like, they didn't paint a picture of what was OnLive. You know?
Yeah.
They kind of made it seem like you kind of had to go through jump through these hoops to get a product that you weren't really sure what you were getting. I think that just comes down to, you know, when companies need to realize, like, when they market things, you know, you can use all the flashy gimmicks you want. If people don't understand your product, there's a good chance people just won't buy it.
Yeah.
You know? When it comes down, like, they need to recognize what it is. You know, with car insurance and stuff, you can have those witty commercials, okay? But they don't know you're selling car insurance, you know? you don't understand, like, why should I buy this car insurance?
Yeah.
You have no idea. Like, they just was like a whole, like, I don't know. I think it's just they have to be clear with their marketing.
Yeah. But, I mean, they did, I thought it was a very cool concept. It's just, especially since they had it come out on iOS and everything, you could have, for instance, they were showing off, you could play Assassin's Creed Revelations right on your tablet or your iPhone or something. You just have to have the controller. But, like, the I think the biggest downfall of it is that they didn't have a huge variety of games to support it, so...
Yeah, I think when you have these kind of... game developers don't really want to... they don't really want to gamble, and, like, they don't see, like, a really big success on your product. Yeah. Like, they don't want to gamble on, like, newly established. That's like, even if a... For example, we were talking about Ouya. Even if Ouya, you know, supported third parties, you know, it said it had a better graphics capability, I think that they really still wouldn't get it because people don't want to, like... They don't want to spend the time and the money, you know, exporting their games over to, you know, this kind of new console. And, without, like, knowing that there's going to be some sort of success.
Yeah.
Okay. So, looking up a little bit about OnLive, I was wrong in saying that you really couldn't play it on... You could play it on your PC, according to the website, but I think... You know, one of the main selling points, actually, in the beginning was it came with its own little console, you know? But mm-hmm. you can't use it on the Xbox. You can't use it on the PS3.
Yeah.
Or the Wii. I think that's one of the major downfalls is a lot of... I mean, PC gaming makes a lot of money, but, like, you already have established retailers. You have Steam, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You have even, like, people who still buy, you know, the hard copies of the games from, yeah. like, GameStop and stuff for the PC. So you have these already established... retailers that you're trying to compete with a service that may to some people may not seem as good.
Yeah, but I mean, just, even though they had the lack of games, there wasn't pretty much that much you could play on it. But I mean, it is pretty cool that you could. One of the features that they did tout was that you could start playing the game like at your home on your big screen TV, but yeah. then you can continue it. Later, if you had to leave, like, on your iPad or something.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. It's kind of like the PS3 and the PS Vita, although at the moment there's not that many games that support cosplay, which is kind of a shame, but
yeah,
it's starting to come out.
Yeah. But on to our last and final story. Speaking of Sony announced a new promotion giving customers who purchased the upcoming Total Recall Blu-ray the opportunity to play the E3 2012 demo of God of War Ascension. Total Recall releases on December 18th. I believe Total Recall was a movie about the guy in the future, kind of lost his memory or something.
Yeah, I believe it was a remake. It was a remake of an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie. Mm-hmm. But it kind of surprised me that God of War is such a big title game. Like, that's arguably Sony's most popular first-party game.
Yeah, basically.
And they're finally... Like, they're releasing the fourth game, and it's... But they're bundling with a movie that... performed, I don't want to say horrible, but did not perform well at all in theaters. People did not critically like the movie. I just think it's kind of weird. Like, you're going to bundle your biggest game with one of the biggest disappointment movies of the year, which is...
Yeah, I think when you have, like, a big, you know, God of War game, is this the official fourth game, or is it one of those, you know, how they made games for the PSP for God of War that was basically, like, a mini kind of God of War game?
I believe it continues on with the story.
Okay.
It's either that, or it's either a prequel to the original story, or it continues on with the story.
I don't know. Maybe it's Sony's show of them losing confidence in their, you know, main series. I mean, you know, when the series goes on for this long, you know, and you know people start maybe they lose confidence in the sales, or maybe they struck a deal with the makers of a Total Recall, because you know, I think these either could be, you know, apply with a. Maybe Sony losing confidence, but I don't really doubt that because God of War's always sold very well. I think it's more of a kind of an issue with the directors and stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't say the directors directly. I would say the people who were involved with Total Recall not really getting as much as they wanted. They maybe struck a deal with Sony, like, hey, you know, we want boosted sales. How about we make a deal with you?
It's like it's not even. I mean, I understand that kind of part, but, like, Total Recall and God of War are two completely different
games. Yeah, I think they're
losing
their...
They don't relate
at all. Total Recall seems to be more of, like, a kind of...
It's sort of like a futuristic kind of sci-fi kind of movie.
Kind of sci-fi, and then God of War is more like a hack-and-slash kind of... I wouldn't say medieval, but kind of more Greek.
Ancient Greek, yeah.
Yeah. I think with the two time periods, you kind of have a difference in taste.
Yeah.
So you might not have... And especially since it's only the demo. Not a lot of people really care that much about demos.
And, like, someone who might have enjoyed Total Recall and is thinking about and wants to buy it, like, Chances are they're not going to be a God of War game. They're not going to be buying it to play the God of War demo. But it's like that's kind of like a very selective crowd.
Somewhere. It'd be like if they were bundling Inception with game demos of Little Big Planet.
Yes,
it wouldn't make sense. I mean, Little Big Planet is some trippy stuff. But I really don't think that people who watch Inception may not, you know, especially be avid fans of Little Big Planet.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, I guess that concludes another episode of the Game Fetish Podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you had just as much fun as we did. Matt, is there anything you'd like to shout out to the listeners and maybe where they can follow you or anything?
I mean, like I mentioned, I have a Twitter at TheManMan0. If you use TheManMan0 on any big game, especially League of Legends, it's generally where you'll find me. I mean, that's basically my username, my stigma, if you will. So, I mean, that's if you're really interested in contacting me, that's basically how you should really do it. That's how you contact me.
Yeah. I guess my stigma, as Matt would call it. C-Tate as in T-A-T-E, 95. That's pretty much my username across all my blogs at Bitmob, Game Informer, IGN, Structoid. You can also follow me on Twitter at ctate1995. But yeah, that's where you can follow me, and hope you enjoyed the episode. Thanks for tuning in, guys.
Yeah.